me, ma'am. And buy you a drink.
Ori wants us to finish this bottle and then three more. Says he'll water his garden with champagne before he'll let the Germans drink it. He's looking at you, kid.
Let us eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow, we die.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Remember, you're fighting for this woman's honor, which is probably more than she ever did.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, welcoming you to another version of the show that's all about the grape in all its glory. Well, last week we wandered outside the glass to drink outside the glass a bit and talk about implements to go with your drinking. Today we are staying a bit outside the glass. Actually, we are staying on the glass. We are talking about labels today. And I know we have discussed labels over and over again about what's supposed to be on them, what they mean. But we're going to take a good look at the psychology of labels today and try and give you some insights into why you drink what you drink. Fortunately, it's not just my psychobabble you get to listen to. We have two great guests joining us today. One is Peter Prager. He is the winemaker at Prager Winery and Port Works in St. Helena. The other one is Paul Braun, and he is president of Braun Research, and he's going to bring us some interesting facts and figures about a recent survey they did of bartenders that really talk about you and what you're drinking, why you're drinking, and specifically names those of you who don't tip well. So pay attention. We'll have fun later in the show with all this. But when you start thinking about labels, you start thinking about why you buy, you think about why you purchase. Ultimately, how do you choose your wine? It has to be by the label. If we had a whole bunch of green, brown, and clear bottles up on the shelf, we wouldn't know which one we wanted. But why do you buy it? Is it the label cute? Is it informative? Is it an image thing? Do you feel like the chateau on the bottle really portrays who and what you want to be? Is it because it sends a message? Obviously, there's a lot of interesting labels out there. As an example, it seems like every major holiday, someone kindly gives me a bottle of bitch wine. Now, whether they're trying to tell me something, I don't know. But sooner or later, they do deliver the point. And I think that's what we're doing when we're looking at labels. We try and identify with one label that matches our personality. Is that necessarily a good thing? I don't know. It keeps us kind of pigeonholed. You know, there are a lot of different things out there when you start looking at the world of labels. I challenge you, take a walk down your supermarket shelves. As you do this, you will encounter a fox, a dog, a cow, a sheep, mice, moose, crane, duck, frog, stag, toad, snake, kangaroo, cat, lion, badger, a goat, a elk, a rabbit, a stork, and a marmot. And for our listeners out there, if you can tell me exactly what a marmot is, I would certainly appreciate that. You can reach us at 877-4-CRUSH-1 or email us info@winecrush.com, because marmot, I have yet to understand what that animal is. But as you walk down the shelf, you see all these furry creatures, our feathered friends, selling wine. Now, you know that all these little beasties aren't sitting in the back cracking a bottle of Boone's Farm, so what do they have to do with what's in the bottle? It's all psychology. Hopefully, it's how you see yourself. Once again, I go back to the reference, whether it's fat bastard or bitch, it kind of concerns us that these wines do sell well. But when you're looking at a wine called Three Blind Mice, what does that say about yourself? On the flip side of it, you can still walk down your Mega Mart shelf. You can buy Marilyn Monroe, Mick Jagger, Dead Red, a Rolling Stone. You can buy Kiss, Doobie Red, Fleetwood Mac Riesling, Blue Koala. So if you're into the whole rock status thing, you can definitely find your own wine. Although those of you buying Doobie Red, perhaps you ought to switch stations. But nevertheless, you see the labels can quantify things that we don't even know about our personalities. So the question is, what do you drink and why? Well, since we're off on the labeling topic, I thought I'd step outside the box a little bit today on my wine recommendations. The white wine I am drinking right now is Screw Kappa Napa. Now, whether or not I felt like I was going back to Animal House or I just had a feeling about Napa this week, I really don't know. But in all honesty, Screw Kappa Napa Chardonnay, around $12 in your Megamart, great bottle of Chardonnay. When I first saw this wine, I took one look at the label and I thought, that wine is going to be wretched. I cannot believe it. It's for fraternities. It's for sororities. I was pleasantly surprised that I took it off the shelf. I bought it. I took it home. I will put this bottle of wine pretty much against anything coming out of Napa Valley at $14 and under. So I encourage you, go screw your Kappa Napa and see what you like about that, and we'll go from there. Now, since I was still thinking about strange things, and actually by this point had gotten in kind of a, shall we say, malicious mood that might match the bottle of wine people keep giving me, I came across the seven deadly sins. And of course, since I was thinking about wrath and rage and anger and hate and all these things, I figured it would go right along. Absolutely not. Seven deadly sins. Great red Zinfandel. Very soft, very lush, very rounded out. Has great pepper flavors. For those of you who are throwing a steak on the grill this week or this weekend, it will be a great accompaniment. And it's very smooth. It will mellow you out as opposed to advocating its title. Well, what got me off on the labeling thing, and we'll talk about this later in the show, and anytime I get to put a soapbox and the French together, it's going to make me very, very happy. The laws recently, actually as of March 10th, officially have changed when it comes to labeling. You know how they say there's seven words on TV and radio you aren't allowed to say? Oh, my producer, his ears just stood straight up. Don't worry, Kent.
I think you've already said about three or four of them today.
Oh, that's all right. I just got three to cover, promise. Okay. Anyway, there are seven words on TV and radio you aren't allowed to say. Well, as of now, there are seven words on a wine label that we can't put on there anymore as the United States. Champagne, Chablis, Burgundy, Port, Clos, C-L-O-S, Chateau, and Sherry. Now, I'm sure there's probably more than this that haven't been fully released. I can think of several off the top of my head, whether it's Chianti, Madeira, some other things we see in our shelves. But those seven things are no longer allowed on labels. If you are planning to export them, if you want them sold in another country, really if you want them sold at all, you're going to have to change your label. Now, there's, of course, some little disclaimers behind this. If you registered with the TTB prior to 2000 or 2002, you don't have to change it. But ultimately, since as Americans, we are such ladies and gentlemen, we are going to honor this gentleman's agreement, and most wineries are going to have to change their labels. So that means that those of you out there, if you're a fan of Chateau Montelena, if you're a fan of Prager Port, if you're a fan of Ficklin Port, if you're a fan of Clos de Bois, or how about Corbel Champagne, all of a sudden, when you go to look for these favorite wines that you like very much, the labels are going to look different. They may have just changed one little part of it, Corbel, dropping Champagne, putting sparkling. Montelena may just go to Montelena and drop the Chateau. But this is where the whole label thing comes into play. As you go to your grocery store and you're looking for your Clos de Bois, and all of a sudden it's just Dubois, are you going to recognize it? Are you going to know that that's the wine you want? And if so, think to yourself, why did I pick this wine to begin with? What does the Clos really matter? Am I drinking Chateau Montelena because the Chateau made me think it was a French wine? So we're going to get in-depth, and we're going to look at a lot of these labels and why we're changing our labels today. But it should make you sit up and think, why are you drinking what you're drinking? And I would love to hear how you picked out your last bottle of wine. Call us, 877-4CRUSH1, or email us, info@winecrush.com. And while you are all thinking very laboriously about the answer to the question, I'm going to take a small break.
Laura Lawson's back in a moment with more of The Wine Crush.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it. So call us right now. 800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. 700-5437. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, call us now and see how we can help you. 800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. That's 800-700-5437. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
If you're self-employed or run a small business, you know your business bottom line. But do you know your bottom line when it comes to your family's health insurance? The Mega Life and Health Insurance Company helps self-employed folks and small business owners focus on the bottom line every day when it comes to their health insurance plans. Here's the bottom line. If you don't have the right health insurance plan, you could be in trouble. Check your health insurance coverage today and call Mega, where the bottom line is quality health insurance designed for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call now for your free health insurance quote. 800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. That's 800-700-5437.
Market and plans vary by state. Not licensed in New York. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Association group plans, where available, require association membership.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
Have a banana.
Eating well.
Have two bananas.
And playing.
Come on, Baloo.
Go together like best friends.
You better believe it.
With the food pyramid, the bare necessities of living healthy are easy.
That bring the bare necessities of life.
It gives you just the right amount of grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans.
Crazy.
So eat right.
You eat it?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
Be active.
I'll move. That's it.
And don't forget to have fun.
You're lots of fun, Baloo.
That's the way to be the best.
You're all right, kid.
At anything you do.
Yeah, man.
You can go to mypyramid.gov to play some games and find out more.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor. Or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
The Wine Crush.
Welcome back to The Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your host for today's evaluation of the grape. Before we took a small break, I was asking you to think about why you bought the last bottle of wine you bought. What was it about the label that made you pick it up off the shelf? So hopefully you've come up with that answer and given us a call, 877-4CRUSH-1. Or you can always go on winecrush.com and comment on the blog that will be up about the label's show. Now, we have joining us right now Peter Prager. He's the winemaker at Prager Winery in Port Works, and he is one of the gentlemen that is totally being affected by the recent changes in the labeling laws. So instead of listening to me ramble about the impact, why don't we hear it from the horse's mouth? Peter, welcome to The Crush.
Well, thank you for having me, Laura, and good day to you and your listeners.
Well, good day to you as well. How are things out in sunny St. Helena?
Actually, it's very sunny.
Oh, I hate you.
A little bit of a breeze going, but I think it's in the high 70s today. It's just a beautiful spring day.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed that the rest of the country sees that at some point.
Hopefully you should soon.
I hope so. Well, Peter, what we're talking about today is we're talking about labels. We're talking about the impact labeling can have. And I understand that you're running into a little bit of problems right now trying to get a standardized label.
Yes, the wine industry here in the United States is having problems with the word port. There were some, back in 2006, there were some trade agreements signed the federal government will no longer allow wineries to put the word port, or they won't approve the labels with the word port on it anymore. Now, for folks like us who've been doing it for 30 years, who have previously, government-approved labels, we're still able to use those. But it's it definitely it stops people who have just started making these fortified wines here in the U.S. So we are sort of kind of taking on this this thing where we're trying to get, if we want this type of industry to flourish here in the U.S., we got to come up with a name or something to call it. So the consumer isn't saying a bunch of words like, red dessert wine and some fanciful name, but what is it? And so we're trying to come up with a standard name for it.
My heart goes out to you because what we're talking about today, I mean, obviously people shop by habit and people shop by things that relate to their personality, or they shop by information. And I know if I'm going and I'm looking for a bottle of port and I'm going to skip the whole Portuguese and the whole Spanish part of it, and I look down and I think, okay, well, wow, what's a fortified wine? Is this Boone's Farm? What thought processes are y'all going through when you're trying to pick this out?
Well, see, that's another thing that's come up. Yeah, we can come up with a name for a fortified wine, which we can't use that name right now. Fortified.
You can't?
Back in the 50s, the government made it illegal. They didn't want the consumer to confuse it with something that makes you feel good with, vitamins and minerals. So the word fortified can't be used either.
Well, that really does put you in a pickle.
Oh, it does. And, I'm president of what's called the Sweet and Fortified Wine Association. It's something that's been around for a couple of years, and it's open to wineries across the country. But for right now, it is mostly California producers. And we just got out of a seminar about a week ago where that was one of the main topics, is what do we call it? Because you're absolutely right. Let's say we do come up with a word, but we make port-style wines. Well, how about the people who make fortified wines in a sherry style or a Madeira style?
Good point.
So it's not just let's find a word and then everything will be fine. You got to be able to differentiate between all the different styles, because what we're producing here in the U.S., we'll go head-to-head with any other fortified wine produced anywhere else in the world.
Oh, I don't disagree that for a second.
Yeah.
But then once y'all finally decide a word, kind of like California did with Meritage, then all of a sudden it's up to you to educate the public on what exactly that bottle is. I have people ask me daily, what is Meritage? What is Meritage? What's this Meritage stuff? Half the people can't even pronounce it.
We're going to be hitting that same problem. That word's been out, I forget how long now, but very, very long time. In fact, the Meritage Association is still growing, but people still are not sure.
Now,
what that's supposed to mean?
Can you use something port style wine on your label, or is that against the rule too?
That's against the regulations. You cannot use the word port style.
So, what kind of word have you come up?
Well, what we came up with are words like fortis, which means to strengthen.
Right.
Another word it's not even a word, but on all of our forms that we, when we fortify wines or add the brandy to the wine, on our government reports, we have to fill in the WSA or the wine spirit editions column.
Right.
With how much brandy, and we're thinking, why don't we just call it WSA, wine spirit edition?
That's actually probably the most straightforward once people understand that wine's fruit, neutral grain fruit spirit's been added here and there.
Right. When I heard that, I just go, wow, perfect. But then it goes back to, is it a sherry style? Is it a port style? there's always something new that comes up. But I think we just have to start, find a word and then go from there.
What about, in Italy, you talk about all the different Chianti consortiums. What if you just pick a little different animal and put a different animal, kind of like your animals, on the labels? Maybe y'all could be, a goat or something like that, and you can identify it that way.
We've never thought of that.
Hey, there are a lot of things on the Crush people don't think about on an often enough scale, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, you just put a, you know, what someone did is they just made their bottle look like a port. Their label was very much like a Portuguese label. Nowhere did it say port, but you look at it and you automatically knew what style of wine that was. And I thought that was a very good idea too. Those big block white letters.
Yep.
They just had that on their label. I go, wow.
Just like
I knew what it was just by looking at it, and nowhere on the label did it say port.
Just like Dow's or just like Croft's, or kind of like I think a lot of people will do that with Riesling now with the tall, skinny bottles.
Yeah. The hock bottles.
Well, question for you. If you're looking at having to change your label, you're looking at how you're changing the presentation of your wine, what do you think the estimated cost to you is of this?
The estimated cost? Well, we have to go submit new labels. Well, first of all, the big hurdle where things are going to be costing money is to go to the government and as an industry and saying, this is what we feel we need, getting this stuff onto the books, I think, is going to be the most costly part of it. Because getting a new label that's not as difficult. But what we have to do first is get it, on the books through the TTB of what this type of wine is, and sort of make it an official wine.
Peter, if there was something you could tell our listeners as they're shopping the shelves, as they're looking to try different things, when it comes to not just your label but all labels, what would you like them to take away about this transition? What would you like them to take away about the labeling?
Well, about the about the labeling, it's what I'd like them to know is when they look at the label, they are looking at a bottle of a U.S. fortified wine. That would be the, if we could get the people to do that, that's most of the battle right there. Just knowing that, no, this wine did not come from Portugal, or no, it didn't come from South Africa, Australia, where other fortified wines are made. But knowing that this was made in the U.S. But, you look at the label, and this whole thing, I think, is kind of a farce because there's been laws on the books for years. When you look at a label and you see the word Napa Valley in the Appalachian area of a label, you know where it's from.
Right.
And from Portugal. It always says the product of Portugal or a product of France. It doesn't matter what it says on the label. It says a product of wherever it's from.
Well, that does make a difference. Well,
yeah.
Peter, I appreciate you being part of the Crush today and helping us clear up some of the labeling laws. For our listeners, you can definitely check out Pragerport at www.pragerport.com, and there'll also be a link to it on the Wine Crush website. So, Peter, thank you very much for being part of the Crush today, and hopefully we can have you back and find out how all this settled out.
Well, Laura, any time, I'd be happy to talk with you.
All right. Thanks, Peter, and enjoy the sunny St. Helena. I'm Laura Lawson, and we are taking a small break here at the Crush, but more on exciting label conversations when we return.
Are you feeling the credit card crunch? You're not alone. Increasing prices and the costs of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts. American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts in collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-793-2153. 800-793-2153. 800-793-2153.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree million-year-old beach. Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air, would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
8. We've worked together for years.
7. I'm the parking attendant. I park your car every day.
1 in 8 Americans is struggling with hunger.
6. We speak at PTA meetings all the time.
Including millions of children and seniors.
5. I went to summer camp with your son last year.
4. I'm your old friend. We went to high school together.
Someone you know is in need.
3. I work at the gas station. I pump your gas.
2. I'm your neighbor. Our kids are classmates.
Who's the 1 in 8 in your life that needs help?
1. We live next door to each other.
You can make a difference through Feeding America and its nationwide network of more than 200 food banks. Take action at feedingamerica.org/1in8. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Wine Crush.
Welcome back to The Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your Chardonnay sipping diva, guiding you through a show that's all about the labels. Labeling laws, why we pick what we pick, why we drink what we drink. So hopefully we're all learning something along the way. I certainly learned a lot talking to Peter Prager. It's nice to know that if I put fortified on anything, that it now has vitamins and minerals and it's healthy for me. So that way anything I drink that's fortified, man, I know I can skip dinner and do whatever I want to do. All right. Well, this wouldn't be a show all about you and all for you if it wasn't for you. And so at that point, we ask you to call us 877-4-CRUSH-1. Let us know what's on your mind and what you think of the labeling laws. Or you can email us info@winecrush.com. And right now I have an email, and the email is from Allison in Chicago, and it kind of goes right hand in hand with the label stuff we're talking about today. The email reads, "My favorite red wine used to be a Chianti, but now the bottle says red table wine, but is still the same producer, the same label, everything, just those words have changed. Why?" Well, Allison, you didn't mention who the producer was, but I have a pretty good idea of who it is. What happens in Italy, there are very, very stringent laws about what a Chianti can be. It has to be Sangiovese. It has to be aged for a certain amount of time. It has to come from a certain region. And if any of these three things are violated, then it cannot be a Chianti. And you're finding a lot more Italian wines that are going to this route of red table wine. We've talked in the news lately about the Brunello incident where it wasn't Sangiovese in the vineyards, where they were concerned doing grape checks, it all wasn't balancing out. This Chianti producer may be covering their bases by making a Sangiovese blend because he doesn't know his vineyards are 100% Sangiovese. Or maybe he's just realized that sometimes Sangiovese needs a little kick from Cabernet or a kick from Cabernet Franc or a little Syrah put in there to make it more drinkable. So does the fact it says red table wine on the label make it any less of a wine than it was? Absolutely not. If you like it, drink it. It's just a little bit different because it's not classified as a Chianti. See, this is where we go back to all the labeling things. When you look at some of the wines coming from the EU, there's very stringent policies as to what can be labeled and why. And I think this is one of the reasons, this is the primary reason, why you're seeing the United States having to change a lot of their labels. Because the Europeans, Italy, Spain, France, put a lot of money and a lot of time to making geographical errors, certain areas. Geographical errors, and I talked about France. I wonder if that wasn't a Freudian slip. Anyway, they have all these areas and regulations and laws that people abide by, and it costs them a lot of money to abide by these things. So that's why they're asking us not just to have an American Chianti in a box that isn't made from Sangiovese. So I do get that part of it. Well, Allison, I hope that answered your question, and happy sipping. And if you don't like that one, trust me, there's plenty of other Chiantis out there on the market. All right, right now we're going to take a call from our wine line. Online, we have Laura from North Carolina. Laura, welcome to the Wine Crush.
I've been reading a lot and hearing a lot about different ways to spend your money wisely, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions at all on how to get a better bang for your buck when it comes to buying wine.
Absolutely. Make someone else pay for it. Very, very simple. Cut and dried. Find someone with an expense account and go out with them. They can be your new best friend. Past that, this is one thing I have really, really enjoyed from my end of the business and something I am seeing. Every town I've ever been to has some kind of creative loafing type magazine. Your city magazine, your city pamphlet that tells you everything that's going on for the week. They also recommend great tattoo parlors, you know, all that strange stuff you find in the back pages. But what's really cool is when you get to the dining section, no matter what the pages are, they're going to have restaurants in there that talk about wine down Wednesdays, half off Mondays, sin nights, where you can go into these restaurants and you can pay half price for a bottle of wine, half price for a glass of wine. This is one of the best ways to go out and try wines and not spend as much money as you would on a Friday or Saturday night. So what I would do is I would pick up my creative loafing. I'd flip to the back. I'd find some neat little restaurant you may not have tried. I'd gather up a group of friends, and I'd go for their half-bottle nights and go check out different bottles and different types of wine. But right now, with the economy and the state it's in, generally the first things to go are dining out and drinking expensively. So all of our restaurants are accommodating us hand over fist, trying to drop their prices down and definitely trying to give you an incentive to get in the door. So since my first suggestion doesn't always work, having a friend with an expense account, definitely go drink on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesdays. Besides, you'll feel better for your chores on the weekend. Well, I hope that helped, Laura, by the way, like your name. And if it didn't, as always, call back 877-4-CRUSH-1 and let us know what you thought. I have another strange email here. We have talked about this before, and it's kind of a tangent, but it does fit in. What is the best way to remove a label from a bottle of wine for my wine book, Carter, in Arizona? Carter, I assume what you're talking about is you are keeping a wine log. And for our listeners, a wine log is kind of like the photo albums we used to have back in the 70s where you had the peel-out pages and you could put the pictures in there. A wine log allows you to pull the labels off the bottle, to put them on the pages, and to write your commentaries about the wine under it. Generally, it was reserved for the wines that you really liked so that the next time you had to go to your local Mega Mart or wine shop and pick up the bottle, you could remember what it was. Trust me, those of you who do not do this and who are experimenting with wine, please do this, because I promise you, the people at the wine shops, your friends who love wine, your buddies in the wine business, were really, really tired of you coming up and saying, hey, I had this great bottle of Chardonnay, the label was beige, the writing was in blue, and I think it may have said Napa on it. We are not mind readers. We cannot help you figure out that bottle 9 out of 10 times. Anyway, Carter, when you have that bottle and you want to take the label off, there are some very expensive little sheets you can buy at your wine shop that they say you stick on the bottle, you peel them off, and the label comes off with them. There is absolutely no need to buy those expensive sheets. One of two things will always work. One, soak it in warm water. Soak it in warm water. Halfway through, 30 minutes later, the label should slide right off. If you don't want to soak the label, go to your local Home Depot, Lowe's, whatever your local home improvement store is, and get clear contact paper like you would do for your wife's shelves or to put in your bottom of your drawers, that kind of thing, and just cut it to fit and put the contact paper on. Take a hair dryer, run it over the hair dryer and the label a little bit. It'll pop right off. So, Carter, hope that helped. Definitely a different way to look at labels, but it does fit into our show. So thank you for adding, I don't know, another tangent and a little bit of dynamic intrinsic-y. So, We have heard some calls. We have taken some emails. But unfortunately, right now, I've got to take a break. But as always, your calls and your emails are welcome here on The Crush, 877-4CRUSH1. Email us, info@winecrush.com, or always post it on our blog at winecrush.com. I'm Laura Lawson. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
We've got more Wine Crush coming up in a moment.
He took me to the Spider Club at Hollywood and Vine. We drank champagne and we danced all night.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. It works. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
I heard in the news the other day about how one man's $3,000 credit card balance exploded to over $10,000 in no time at all. As good as the plastic in your wallet may be, if you run into any problems with your credit card companies, they'll hit you so hard with late and over-limit fees that your head'll spin, and so will your debt. At that point, you cannot stop your runaway debt problem. Well, yes, you can. If your credit card debt is out of control, you're getting collection calls, you're mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore, call us and one of our partner companies will negotiate on your behalf and show you strategies to help you get out of debt.
If you have $10,000 or more in unsecured debt, call now for a free debt analysis. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles. Take it from Carroll Shelby.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean it.
Log on to ZMAX.com and find a retail performance partner. ZMAX. Performance you can feel.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Songer.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. Uh-huh! I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit cards.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and we are working on labeling our labels today. We've had a couple interested guests. We have definitely talked about some interesting emails and phone calls. But another aspect of labels we have to consider is the fact that even though we have different ways of picking them, that they're going to be more confusing to pick, what happens when we go to our favorite restaurants and we're ordering wines? Do we stay with our favorite labels? Well, we have a gentleman right now, Paul Braun. He is president of Braun Research. They have just completed a bartender study about consumer behavior. And as I warned you, it's going to be a tell-all exposition, but right now we're going to have some fun. Paul, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you very much for calling in. I had seen everything about your poll that you just did. So you went around the country and you polled bartenders on what people are drinking and their behavior, correct?
That's right.
All right. The most interesting thing, there's a lot of interesting things that came out of this survey, but I thought it was fascinating that in this economy, I think it was 63.5% of the people who were drinking branded. Is that correct?
That's right.
What does that mean to our listeners?
Well, it seems to me that what happens is people drink what they have gotten used to and what they think is what they want people to see them drink. And in all, what we're finding in our data is that of the bartenders that we interviewed, and these are bartenders, by the way, that reach across all types of bars and fine dining restaurants, chain restaurants, is that while people are drinking what they want out in public, what they do when they get home is drink down. In other words, they go for something a lot more expensive, less expensive.
All right. So they're being rich in public and cheap in private.
Exactly.
All right. So basically, we've got a whole bunch of people running around the grocery stores with glasses and big floppy hats on trying to hide their bottle of Boone's Farm in their grocery cart.
Yeah, I guess I would sort of call it going from sort of cake bread drinkers in public to two-buck chuck drinkers at home.
I wondered why all these boxes were flying off the shelf. Now I get it. When bartenders noticed this shift, was it parallel with the economy crashing, or was it something that they had seen before?
I think this is different. When in most recessions, liquor has basically been, alcohol consumption has been essentially recession-proof. In this recession, it seems that people are making adjustments. The adjustments that we're seeing, in fact, include going from different cocktails to less complicated drinks, perhaps, and that we're also seeing some movement going to beer, people who used to drink cocktails, and that's really a first. While we've noticed in the past people drinking less expensively, now it seems that people are making some real adjustments to their alcohol consumption.
I think a lot of people are changing. The thing that we see most common on our side is that people are drinking less out at restaurants, whereas they may go out and have four glasses of wine. Now they're having two glasses of wine, but it tends to be really, really good wine. Like you were saying, they're still drinking up at restaurants. They're just conserving what they're drinking.
Well, what we're also finding are people are drinking what's on special. So if they see something that may be appealing that would be something that a restaurant or a fine dining restaurant is offering, that will attract attention, especially if it's a special. So they'll still get their alcohol punch, but perhaps with less cost.
I think that a lot of our restaurateurs' ears just perked up when you said that, because everyone seems to run some kind of special. We had a caller earlier that asked a question about getting more bang for their buck, and I said, look for the wine down Wednesdays or when the restaurants offer half-price bottles of wine. Is this truly driving the business?
I would say that based on our data and speaking to some of our bartenders, that what we are really seeing is some attempt to maintain the same volume or perhaps even increase the amount of alcohol in a drink in order to make, you know, I would guess the same effect from fewer drinks. That's the kind of effect that we're seeing, and that while they're seeing drinks changing, people are still looking for some kind of alcohol consumption that essentially is more powerful. And that's really what we're seeing.
All right. So instead of having, maybe a nice little vodka tonic, we're going to go have a double martini. I get it.
Yeah, shots are still in the same place that they were before this recession hit. That's the same. And in fact, the only thing that we've seen change very dramatically is the complicated drinks, going down to something more like a simple mixed drink of vodka and orange juice or something along those lines.
So basically no more of the two or three liquor drinks like a White Russian or a Manhattan. It's going to scotch and soda.
Right.
When you're looking at things, obviously what we're talking about today is the fact that most people are branded. And they're going to spend their money. It doesn't matter. There's 45,000 different wines out there. If I'm going to a restaurant and I'm going to chance something, if I know I like Kendall Jackson Chardonnay, I'm going to order Kendall Jackson, even though there might be a better value. Did your bartenders comment on that, or were they saying that, yes, people definitely were drinking to the brand?
It's still in public, yes, and especially because there are so many more choices than there used to be. Any vodka drinker can tell you, of course, that, you know, the amount of bar space is actually what's up for grabs here now, that the brand does matter a lot, and that if they are familiar with it, they will go after it. And still, While that may be the case in public, because people are being a lot more cautious, they're asking the price of drinks a lot more than they used to, and most of our bartenders have commented on that. So even if they are, you know, branded, they might ask for which of those brands are the least expensive.
Well, I think that's smart. It's a shame people don't do that day in and day out, not just when it's in a bad economy.
And not just with liquor, I suppose. That's true of any item that's being purchased.
Well, you would hope so. Question for you. Obviously, you did the survey with all the bartenders. In parting, was there anything about this survey that surprised you? Did anyone say anything that made you laugh out loud? Was there anything that took you aback?
I suppose that when I see that shots have stayed the same, and I see that liquor consumption is essentially, as they say, recession-proof it in the past, I think the only thing that surprised me was about the inquiry of the cost, because in terms of how many people are asking, by a factor of 8 to 1, our bartenders talked about the fact that all patrons are inquiring, and I just wonder what that would be like in terms of, you know, are they negotiating? Are they just sort of saying, hey, look, I have $10. What do you think I should be buying? And I think that was the thing that really surprised me most. What also surprised me is the number of people who are more likely to order beer versus a mixed drink, which is something that has changed dramatically again, because before we used to find that people would sort of stick to the kinds of drinks that they would like. But in this case, you know, moving from a mixed drink to a beer is really a surprise to me.
I like that idea. All right, we can treat our bartender like we're at a flea market. Hey, I like the price you have on that Cape Bread Chardonnay at $20. Tell you what, I'll give you $15 and we'll call it even.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Paul, thank you very much for calling in, being part of the Crush. It's always nice to have a facts and figures guy to cut down on the rants and raves.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll get you back on the show and find some other interesting consumer behavior polls we can find out about.
Thank you very much for having me, Laura.
All right, Paul, you take care.
You too.
For those of you interested in hearing more about Paul Braun's research, there will be a link on our website, which is winecrush.com. That is wine without the H. That would be W-I-N-E. All right, we'll take a small break, and we'll be back and wrap up the labels of the labeling show.
Laura Lawson's got more Wine Crush in just a moment.
She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need health insurance, you need to make this free call and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. They specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it.
Here's the number. Call right now. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Don't take risks with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable family health insurance, call now.
800-799-9991. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Not available in all states. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Not licensed in New York.
Mr. Jackson, we're calling to say you're late on your credit card bill. Can you please call us to schedule a payment and avoid future late fees?
If you're getting collection calls from your credit card companies and you want to put a stop to it, gather your bills now and call the Debt Helpline.
Mr. Jackson, we've been trying to reach you. If we don't hear from you soon, your account will go into collections.
We can help you stop the late and over limit fees on most of your credit cards and reduce your high interest rates, in some cases up to 60%.
Mr. Jackson, this is our last warning call. The next call will be from our legal department.
Get your debt and credit card bills under control. Gather your bills and call today for a free consultation on how we can help you get out of debt. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815.
Well, howdy! Thanks for coming to Big Bubba's. We got a mess of used cars. What can we do for you?
We're looking for,
something cute.
Well, here's a beauty. A 99 model with a moonroof. As a bonus, we'll throw in a leaking gas tank. You could be driving and kaboom! Adds that zing of excitement.
You got any other cars?
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
I'm Laura Lawson. Welcome back to The Wine Crush. You have spent the last hour listening to us talk about labels, labeling the bottles, labeling the brands, and the people who create the labels and what's happening in the world of print in doing so. It's always entertaining to get so many different opinions, and I think today it's culminated in a great mix. We've learned that the laws are changing, and it's going to cost Californians some money to actually update the labels in their wineries' profiles. We've learned that as consumers, you like to go to bars, and when you go to bars, you order by brand. We are going to be watching for the rest of you in the grocery store, though sneaking around, seeing what you're really buying in private. So be warned, I'm watching. But also we have learned that no matter what it comes down to, a label is just that. And so if I may take a moment, whether you are buying for your own conscience, whether you're buying to make yourself look better, whether you are buying wines because the label matches your personality, such as bitch for me, or whether you are buying something for your father-in-law, such as fat bastard, it really doesn't matter what the label says. You communicate by what you're drinking and when you're drinking it. And I think that's something I have to leave with you. Remember, you can't judge a book by its cover, and you cannot judge a wine by its label. As we get through the next 18 months, when the greats like Chateau Montelena all of a sudden become Montelena, as Clos du Bois, I can't see it just being du Bois, but it has to change its whole label, its whole persona. Is that going to change what's in the bottle? No, absolutely not. And you should not let the label changes affect what you're drinking and how you're buying. So I ask you, as you're going down your grocery store shelf, whether you're seeing a cat, a raccoon, a dog, a parakeet, it does not matter what you see on the label. If you feel like you're joining a fraternity by drinking Screwcap and Napa, I don't care. Give it a pause and give it a look. People put these wines on a shelf for a reason. They put the colors, they put the taglines, they put the little furry animals on it. But ultimately, with the competition we have in this country today, with the competition for your dollars, with the competition for your attention, people are going to go the extra mile. And I promise you, whatever's in the bottle that you pick up on the shelf, it's going to be worth your investment, no matter it has a label on it or if it's pink and sunny. So, I'm Laura Lawson, reminding you several things from The Wine Crush. We ask you to sip socially. We ask you to drink responsibly. Most of all, we ask you to drink what you like, not what you're told. And finally, in vino veritas, in wine, there is truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'm looking forward to seeing you next week.